We are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven. That which we are one equal temple of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. Welcome to the Resistance.
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 Welcome back to Resistance TV. I just want to make a disclaimer. I've said this before in some places, maybe on the blog, maybe on here. We don't have actual views. Like, I think theoretically, we're actually considering maybe adding. We're always considering potentially adding more people to the crew. Yeah, don't shake your head, Emil. He wants to get some Catholics in here, clearly, because he likes worshiping Mary.
Yeah.
In any case, we don't have like a doctrinal statement. You know, we're Christians, and what any one of us says is not necessarily representative of what any of the other ones say. And if you listen to our last podcast, clearly we like yelling at each other. So this time we're going to talk about like evolution, Darwinism, Genesis, origins, the nature of like how science and faith relate, stuff like that.
If you are listening to this, you are the Resistance.
And just to be clear, like I just said, we don't really have a position. We don't have a specific position really on anything except for, you know, like Jesus is the Savior. He's God. Like really basic stuff like that. So aside from that, each of us has, you know, we have our own opinions and stuff, clearly. In any case, does someone want to get... start talking about that?
So I used to think this stuff was important.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think we can all agree, you know, like, I went through a little, like, Kent Hovind phase. It wasn't as long as Emil's.
Mine was, what, a year? 2 years?
Yeah.
I think everyone likes Kent Hovind at some point.
Oh, Lord. And I used to actually think, like, evolution was a huge
barrier,
obstacle, yeah, that Christians had to overcome. So yesterday I was in a conversation with a guy that comes on our Periscope channel pretty often, and he's an atheist. Smart young man. And he pretty much said that the reason why he grew up in a Christian home, he left Christianity, was because Christian views did not correlate with reality. And I said, okay, can you tell me specifically, like, what? And he said, well, the story of Adam and Eve. I said, well, that's not a salvific issue per se. So you can still be a Christian and have a difference of opinion on that. I might disagree with you. But, you know, so I gave examples of, like, someone like Francis Collins. Francis Collins believes in evolution. He just doesn't believe in naturalistic evolution. Mm-hmm. He claims to be evangelical Christian. And I'm sure he believes Jesus is Lord and confesses him as Lord and believes in the Trinity and, yeah, you know, the essential doctrines of the Christian faith. Now, whether we have biblical disagreements with one another in regards to Paul's view of Adam and Eve in the book of Romans and Jesus being the second Adam and whether it's a historical character or not, like all this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I said, is past kind of what we're talking about. So I said, you can still be a Christian. You can still be saved, let me put it that way. You can still confess Jesus as Lord and die and be wrong and still end up spending eternity with God. And so, yeah, we spoke about a number of things. So I guess I want to say that because if there's anybody listening that actually thinks some of these things are fundamental in regards to Christian dialogue and being saved, is, you know, and using that in the popular way that people use, yeah, you know, that word, then I would say it doesn't matter. And I've changed my view on the Genesis account probably like 3 times.
Yeah.
In the amount of time I've been a Christian. Young Earth creationism was the thing. And I was like, okay, that doesn't make much sense. And I was like, okay, old earth creationism. And then now I hold to a really, I don't want to say weird, but, you know, I hold to a view that a lot of people aren't even, a lot of people aren't familiar with unless you actually read theological stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when you share it with your kind of average common Christian, they freak out, namely because they've heard these other preachers or other teachers say, well, if anybody disagrees with young earth creationism, they're like some kind of a weird heretic or something like that. Yeah. Now, someone told me the other day, he said, well, what are people's positions at your church? And I said, well, they're different. He said, it's not like they believe in Big Bang or anything like that. And I kind of said, well, I believe in the Big Bang.
Yeah.
I just think it happened when God said, let there be light.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
he meant something else completely when he was trying to refer to whatever the Big Bang is, you know.
Yeah.
So, take it away.
I just think that there's just, you know, every single conversation about the issue, at least the popularized ones, if not those and the I feel like those and the ones I hear, are, you know, this conversation that can so easily be reconciled if we come to terms with the fact that God could have done it. And what people are just trying to find is how God did it. And it, you know, you can't just divorce God from science and the fact that God created things in a way that we can observe.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, one day we may even have explanation for a lot of miracles that today we just call miracles because we don't see what's going on beneath the microscope. I'm not saying that we definitely will, but all that to say is that God is still behind the observable and unobservable.
Yeah. Or maybe we might need to confess that our definition of miracles has been wrong. I mean, I disagree with the way that the word miracle is popularly used.
Well, and there's miracle, and then there's like signs and wonders.
Yeah.
And I mean, God can do a sign. Signs and, like, so right now, I guess it's because Eric Metaxas tried to popularize this definition of miracle.
Hmm.
People are calling, like, I was just listening to a podcast about Thanksgiving. Which, depending on when we publish this, is either like just happened or, yeah, it'll probably be within a week of Thanksgiving. But the story of Squanto and the first pilgrims, like Eric Metaxas likes to call that a miracle, because it's a coincidence of such extreme improbability that someone who spoke their language just happened to be near the island of Manhattan, or that's where they were trying to go, and they wound up near Boston, what is today Boston. And so he in this, I think I was listening to the Blaze, so it was what's his face, that Glenn Beck.
Hmm.
And people just say this, like, you know, that could be a sign and wonder, that could be like God's providential working, but really when we say miracle, we mean something that's like not possible without God kind of doing it directly.
Yeah, I just say a miracle is something that's done where the laws of nature are suspended.
Something like that. Yeah. Something that couldn't have happened. Squanto could have learned English and he could have made his way back. I mean, there is not any part of that story where God directly comes. That's another thing, too. God often makes it clear when he's like, you know, has a miraculous sign or wonder. But yeah, there could be some stuff, too. I mean, it doesn't have to be a miracle to be a sign of God's working, but he like interprets history himself, and he will tell us.
So could we all agree that the creation of the universe is a miracle?
Well, I guess, yeah. I mean, well, according to your definition, it's actually not.
Well, how not?
Because you said the laws of nature are suspended. But
yeah, so the laws of nature don't exist. He creates the laws.
Right, so that's not a miracle. Yeah. That's just a thing.
Okay. Sure. Maybe it's a weak definition. I would consider it a miracle.
It's supernatural.
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing. I would consider it a supernatural event.
Yeah, because it's even, I mean, it's pre-natural.
Are you saying the laws of nature, or at least the laws of nature as obvious, I mean, this is kind of an obvious question, but or the laws of nature as we observe them?
No, it would be the laws of nature as they actually are. So in that sense, suspended. I guess you could say it's a miracle, because there is a natural world prior to the physical world, It's just that it's not material or physical.
So sure,
like,
okay.
Angels have rules that they live by, stuff like that. They're just not extended in the same way we are. So none of the angels could have made the universe. So in that sense, I guess so, yeah.
Okay.
I guess
okay.
It could be a miracle.
Okay, so tell me, Emil, that how much of a young Earth creationist you are.
Young Earth creationist?
I'm just picking
up. The Holman poison out yet?
I don't know how old the Earth is.
Would it depend on what N.T. Wright believed?
No. I don't know how old the Earth is. I also don't know if it's that important, to be honest. Like, in the grand scheme of things, I don't know if it matters too much. I'm not trying to belittle anyone who's doing their studies on it. It's wonderful. The only problem I have with science is that they don't realize that just because they're explaining the how, they somehow enter into the why.
Yeah.
You know? Like, because this is how evolution works, they end up going into the, I don't know, teleological argument, the purpose, the whys.
Yeah.
And they go like, oh, so we don't need God, therefore. You know? Or there's no purpose because of this. So that's one of the issues I have with...
No, and that's always going to be a logical problem in some of these discussions because, like, Richard Dawkins really believes that Darwinism disproves God's existence. That's insane.
He's so cute.
Yeah. Sure. I wish I could just put him in a little cage and feed him gumdrops. No, but seriously, that's what he thinks. Like, he thinks that Darwinism has made the quote-unquote God hypothesis unnecessary.
Yeah.
That's... Oh, that is so stupid for so many reasons. It's just like... Because what he believes... He's already importing so much stuff into his Darwinism. That's part of the problem, too. Because he thinks it necessitates... Well, Darwinism kind of does necessitate materialism. And that's why it's false.
Yeah.
As a formal theory... Like, someone like Francis Collins can reject that part of the theory and still say he's a kind of a Darwinist. But that's sort of like being a Christian communist in a way. Because, like, communism is based in atheism. Now, maybe you think socialism is more correct and you want to use, like, Christianity to sort of baptize socialism. I think that's sort of what Collins is doing. I think that's fine. But, like, strictly speaking, as stated, Darwinism does make philosophical claims. Mm-hmm. And that means that the theory is false. I don't even need to revert to God for that. Just the fact that we have mental qualia, like... experiences that are in our minds instead of our brains, because your brain can't experience anything. It's just a piece of meat. Like, that itself is a big problem for Darwinism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone asked me why I believed in God yesterday, and I said, because I have consciousness.
Yeah, that's a pretty good answer. I guess there could be another explanation for it, but the explanation would
be... Can't be natural.
Exactly. The explanation would be so similar to what we say God is that you would... Well, you definitely wouldn't be an atheist.
Exactly. And you wouldn't be a naturalist. That's the thing.
Well, yeah, I guess you could be a naturalist, but you'd have to couch it in really strange ways. Because you can't be a materialist.
Sure, okay.
That's the weird thing about that. And the problem with it is most naturalists are materialists.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But I guess you could say Platonism kind of... I don't know, man. Some people do mean materialism when they say naturalism. It's very complicated.
I do.
That's usually what it means. I mean, usually that is what it means.
Because that's... Unless you want to redefine terms.
Yeah, like Emil.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just winking and sticking at his tongue when he said that. Because these guys are on their phones. So he's over here trying
to... It's Thanksgiving plans. I'm listening to the conversation with my left ear.
I'm just playing a video game.
Emil, it turns out Emil's actually not that hard to kidnap. I don't know if you guys remember, but we mentioned more than once that he's wearing an I'm hard to kidnap shirt.
He likes wearing
it. It's his favorite shirt. Like, he wears it a lot.
Seriously? And I just picked him up from his house, and technically I kidnapped him.
So. I don't think it's his favorite. I think it's just rejected by his girlfriend, so he wears it when he's around us.
Are you serious?
No, she doesn't like the shirt.
Yeah, she doesn't
so
like it.
So it's your last act.
It's like a challenge.
He goes to bed in it.
Like, someone's going to see it one day and be like, challenge accepted. And then just like kidnap him.
Exactly. I don't know why you would wear that shirt.
It's like you're asking for it.
For Richard.
I think the three of us might just beat you and kidnap you just for fun.
So I think we're all kind of agreed. And this is pretty strange considering where we've come from. We're all kind of agreed that, like, this issue isn't that big a deal.
You know, it's a big deal to me because I love the topic, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, music is also a big deal to me.
Well, sure.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to God and purpose and understanding our place in history. But yeah, I agree with you that.
It's not a big deal in regards to what is the question should be. Is that
we can disagree with another Christian or non-Christian on this to almost like black and white kind of difference, and still be totally living this kind of the same way, same purpose, same morals, same ethic, all that stuff.
Well, and most Christians are sort of at that point in the West now. Like, they're not all there. You've got your Chem Hamites and your...
There's a lot of leftover...
Hovindites.
Yeah, there's a lot of leftover kind of like...
From the 90s.
I don't know. Rituals we go through when talking about this. And then we catch ourselves. Like, I've been in conversations with people before who've been like, oh, but, you know, evolution... You know, some people believe in evolution. Hold on, but what do you...
Evolution seems...
Where are you going with this, you know?
Well, that's the thing, too. I always used to hear that, well, what do you mean? You mean micro or macro evolution?
Yeah.
That's an important distinction, but to me now, the bigger problem is whether or not you're an Emilite. No, it's whether...
What?
It's whether, yeah, well, you keep making weird faces. It's not fair, because no one can see what a goofball you are.
I'm not doing any faces. Can you prove that?
Can we?
God. Where's the empirical evidence, sir?
My memory is the empirical evidence.
Oh! That's actually pretty
good. Can we vote, like, young Earth, old Earth?
Sure, let's do that really quick. Who considers themselves young Earth? Raise your hand.
ML has his head down.
Is anyone raising their hand?
Can I explain it before I raise my hand? I believe...
Wait, hold on. He raised
seemingly.
Raise your hand.
Seemingly.
Okay, he did raise his hand.
Seemingly, the Earth seems to be
old. So basically, you could say...
I feel like God created the world in such a way that if scientists try to see how old it is, it's older than what it seems.
Okay, so
God can create someone to...
You're an anti-realist.
No, he can create humans to look older than they are.
Okay, you're not listening to me. In regards to philosophical perspective of the world, you're an anti-realist.
Okay.
Okay, that's why you believe that God created the universe with age. It appears as if it has age, but it's not really old. It's all you would need to do is put in your anti-realist perspective in there.
Well, but he's only really anti-realist in regarding an event.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
So, but that's the thing. I mean,
but he can say that. It's fair.
Yeah, sure. But and the thing, part of the thing too, is that I think almost... It seems like what happened over the last 20 or so years is evangelicals came to a point, I think this is more complicated than some of the other churches, but within the evangelical church for the most part, it seems like we've come to this point where we're willing to accept that Darwinism in its description of the history of life may be accurate.
Sure.
Or it's at least not off the table.
Can we go to the humans evolving from apes?
That is the point at which I think almost everyone, evangelicals, have, I think, created this compromise position where Darwinism is not off the table. Adam and Eve are an act of special creation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Haig, is that what you were going to...
Yeah.
It's something like that. Like, the real sticking point is the evolution of humans. And the funny thing is, John Walton seems to have created another position that even makes that compromise position kind of like irrelevant, because he doesn't think that what... Here's the thing. If the scriptures don't teach anything directly contradicting any of this stuff, then it is potentially a viable explanation if the scriptures aren't violated.
So let's go back to our voting. ML is a young Earth creationist.
Yeah.
Or he leans towards young Earth creationism, except he'd have to be like an anti-realist in regards to that event.
Which is what I was always kind of taught growing up. I was always taught, you know, the Earth was created with the appearance of age. Because we know about like the development of an igneous rock.
Hmm.
You know, like it... Could God speak it into existence? Sure. Technically, igneous rocks are formed by, you know, volcanic activity, stuff like that. So, And are the rest of us saying that we're... Old Earth?
Creation? Yeah, so the old Earth has a specific definition to it in regards to the way it views the Genesis account. So I would, for example, say that I believe that the Earth is old, it has age, but I wouldn't classify myself as an old Earth creationist. Mm. I'd still classify myself as a creationist. I just don't think that's what the purpose of the Genesis account is.
We have to remember it's the law. This is being repeated generation after generation to...
Does that make sense?
Illiterate...
Kind of.
Mostly illiterate people. That this is how this is what God did, and the culmination of those days were these people create this creation created in His image from each other for the purpose of community and reflecting His glory through that community. And so, so it's not like a scientific manual so that we can do it ourselves. Like, why would God give us a scientific manual to creation? It doesn't even make sense.
No, and that's, I think, the biggest problem with, like, Ken Ham and people like that is that they really, really want the Genesis account to be a refutation of evolution in some misguided attempt to defeat atheism by default. And the problem is that Ken Ham and Richard Dawkins are almost operating on the same worldview and the opposite.
Yeah.
It's like God, none of this really matters because Jesus isn't really involved in any of these debates. Yeah. Like, Jesus is a totally separate issue.
Well, besides the fact that Jesus is part of creation and all things.
He's right, not part of creation.
But I mean,
no, sorry. Jesus,
I mean, technically he is.
Jesus is the creator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One with the creator and the creator.
And he became,
and all things were created.
And he became a part of the creation too.
Sure. So the closest thing that would come to my view on this would be like a framework model, but I wouldn't even say that. So I call my view, I say that Genesis, the creation account specifically is, I think, an apologetic against Egyptian and Babylonian polytheism.
Yeah. That's definitely involved.
Yeah.
So a large portion of it, I think. Now, that's not to say I don't think God created the universe. Like, it's there. He created it. So I think it's true, but it's not literal, right? And it has a purpose to it. Mm-hmm. And the purpose is more about how to elevate Yahweh, the God of the Jews, and say that He is the creator of the heavens and the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And all these other gods that the Egyptians and Babylonians worship are fake. They're a part of creation. So they don't deserve the title God, you could say. You know? Because that's essentially the argument for the rest of the Pentateuch.
Yeah, or if... Well, they're not worthy of the title God, but they're not worthy of Israel's worship.
Sure, yeah.
So, and that's the thing. The Old Testament is a lot more ambiguous on some of this stuff than we kind of like to pretend it is. Because, strictly speaking, the Genesis account is not an account of creation ex nihilo.
Yes, exactly.
So, it's definitely... Here's the thing. When you read the other accounts from the time, like, you see the similarities, but the differences are also really striking. Like, there's this... And someone will probably say this is just because I'm a Christian, and I... You know, fair enough. But it seems to me like there is always a tenor to Scripture that has... It's very sparse a lot of the time. Scriptural narratives are often very sparse and very specific. They just don't have, like, a lot of the flourishes that other mythological accounts have. It's strange. Like, when you compare them, like, so when Price, Robert Price, uses the accounts of the 3rd century prophet, I can't remember his name, and he puts them next to the accounts of Jesus, he thinks that he's proving that the Christological accounts are clearly mythical. And I think that by reading them side by side, it's so clear that they're not, because they're almost nothing alike.
Yeah, oh yeah. Like, you're talking about, like, the apocalypse of Peter and all that stuff?
No, I'm talking specifically about... I mean, some of that stuff would apply, too, but I'm talking specifically about that prophet from the 2nd or 3rd century that he... I really can't remember the guy's name. It begins with an A. In any case, I think the... I mean, to me, there's, like, what does Scripture actually mean, and what is the science saying? And I think if the Scriptures required us to hold to a Ken Ham view, if they did, then we probably would be in some kind of worldview trouble. Like, there would be a sense in which, because there is a lot of evidence pointing towards the Earth being very old, natural life having some kind of a history. I still don't think that, I'm not convinced at this point. So this side of the table, Limey's all on his own. This side of the table, we're all, like, at least open to...
I think the universe is older than young Earth and younger than modern science thinks it is. I literally think those thoughts.
So we're
somewhere. Okay. Somewhere.
We're definitely old Earthers.
Yeah, definitely older.
I'm sort of agnostic
for
about
sure.
It.
For sure. I was going to say I'm more agnostic. I just lean more towards that the Earth might not be as old as we think because God could have simply created it to be different.
Yeah, but what does the evidence say is the question.
Old.
I mean, unless you're gonna have some kind of a philosophical way of saying why it appears as old, but it's not actually old.
Yeah.
Then that's not necessarily a scientific thing. It's more of a philosophical argument.
Yeah.
That's why I said you're an anti-realist to that.
Look, I think...
Real quick, I think that if the universe is old, it shows... then the Genesis account shows the magnitude of God's sovereignty over creation as, I think, more monumental, more grand. Because even though he simply spoke it all into creation, his speaking was through the span of millions of years. That's really special.
Yeah.
Does believing in old Earth necessarily mean that they also believe that humans came from?
No.
Okay,
no.
So it won't be connected, right?
No. At all. Humans coming from apes has to have evidence. There has to be evidence for that.
So I think Francis Collins would say yes to that he thinks humans came from apes. And that's why he believes in evolution. But there's people who think, like, animals evolved, but humans were a special creation.
Yeah.
I think that's a viable option, namely because of the way Scripture treats Adam and Eve, these moral agents who rebelled against God and stuff. That's part of the reason why I can't believe in Darwinian evolution, even in a theistic model, because you have to explain the development of morality and how that came about, and without having, like, a special... Even, like, in that evolutionary process, it'd have to be where God kind of zaps morality into these creations. So you still have some kind of a involvement.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, too, is Darwinism says nothing about the development of the soul.
Yeah.
And animals are also ensouled.
Yeah.
They have a non-physical part to them.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everything does. Like, rocks maybe don't, but...
Plants
might have some kind of... I mean, I don't know. It seems unlikely.
Sing to them, they feel happy. I'm serious.
Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, they do say there's a thing.
That's true.
But I guess my point is that God can be doing some kind of evolution of the soul concurrently. I don't know. I mean, did you see the movie Noah?
No.
I really like that movie.
You did?
I love that movie. Yeah.
I heard it was horrendous. That's why I haven't watched it.
I loved it. Oh, I think it's a great film. I like all of Aronofsky's stuff. If you don't like Aronofsky, you might not like it. But I think you guys will dig it. Hmm. We should watch it and then do a discussion podcast about it.
We should.
Because actually, we might be publishing a paper on it on the blog soon about the film.
We might be. He's working on something.
Well, because a friend of mine wrote a really good paper for, you know, when he was in seminary or undergrad, actually, on it. And I'm going through it right now. We're thinking about maybe putting it on the blog.
Okay.
We guys, for anyone who's interested in the inner workings of this, there is no logic. We just do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's at this point anyway. It's like the Wild Wild West. And that's the way we like it.
Like the Will Smith.
Our lives are kind of like that, man.
Yeah.
Like the Will Smith Wild Wild
West? No, I hate that film.
No.
There's no giant tarantulas.
Look at this really racist.
So going back to...
It's kind of cool because in the creation account in Noah, in that film, it's really interesting because they do this like sort of classic Darwinian montage, and you see it all leading up to an ape, okay? And then suddenly, it's like white light, and the next thing you see is literally, Adam and Eve are literally depicted as beings of light. It's really strange. And the Eastern Orthodox, some Eastern Orthodox Christians actually believe that when humans were created, they were kind of almost angelic.
This is like the whole deification conversation?
Sort of. And I think it's actually more of a sort of a Gnostic thing that's infused their theology a little bit. But they think that the part in the Genesis account that says, and he made for them clothes of skin, they think that that's actually their glory being covered.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's really strange. It's not very strong in the Eastern Church, but there are some theologians who believe something like that. But I think it's actually got something to do, because Aronofsky is like a Reformed Jew. So I think it actually has something to do with some weird like Kabbalistic belief or something like that. It's just really fascinating because they're almost implicitly saying in the narrative that to get from here to here, something crazy has to happen. God has to slice in here and be like, all right, so I got this monkey and I'm going to make it into a human. Almost.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
That's interesting. Okay, now you're getting me to want to
watch this. No, you're right. It's not a monkey, it's an ape.
Yeah. You're getting me to want to watch this film.
So, yeah, I want to watch it maybe tonight.
It's pretty epic.
But, so...
Okay, crazy... It's very Calvinistic.
Crazy theory.
No, it's not.
It's also got a bunch of the Book of Enoch stuff in there.
Yeah, which is one of the things
I love this heresy stuff.
It's cool about it.
So, crazy
heresy. Michael Heiser would say you're nuts.
We got close to humans... evolution.
Sorry, I'm cutting you off, but can we agree, and maybe for someone who's listening to this who is who's not a Christian and or has left Christianity, that's kind of the view. I mean, I'm assuming some people are listening to this, aren't they? Also, like Christians who hold to things that are very dogmatic and shouldn't. Can we agree that this stuff really has nothing to do with their salvation? Or can we not?
Or even salvation history, like the story of God itself.
Well, and I think you would have to have really obviously bad beliefs for it to even matter. Because it's like, well, I'm not really sure if God created everything, but I'm a Christian. Eh.
Okay.
This is weird. But when you're having discussions about origins, almost nothing is off the table.
So only the only thing it seems to me that matters doctrinally to Christian belief is how we look at original sin. Like, because the whole problem that human beings find themselves in that they need rescue from, which leads us to the actual gospel, is Adam and Eve rebelling against God.
Yeah.
As long as that remains intact and you have some kind of a way of explaining that scripture teaches that we made a decision to rebel against God and we're all liable for being sinners and need rescue, we can have room of conversation about this. By the way, we're not just saying, like, sometimes people think, like, this conversation only happens, like, after Darwin. Mm-hmm. And it's not. Christian theologians, even Jewish rabbis, were having conversations about the age of the earth and how to explain these things. So I just... We're not... You know, it's very easy to sit there and say, oh, look at these guys spewing out liberal nonsense.
Yeah.
This has just been a part of the tradition and conversation about this subject.
What were you going to say?
Sorry,
I was looking something up real quick. But I was going to say, what if we evolved to the point where we were like subhuman, right? And then God got involved. Like, not that he wasn't already involved, but then
I know what you're saying.
Like, miracle number one is creation, given Arthur's previous definition of miracles. And then miracle number two is them being made in his image. And like God came and he literally took them. It says he took them from the ground.
Yeah,
and somehow like
fashioned them,
breathed something, you know.
Yeah.
And so I personally don't think that there was this one day where God came. One day God came down and grabbed some dirt and made people.
Yeah.
Because that's not how biblical literature works.
Well, in that phrase specifically, John Walton goes into why that phrase doesn't mean that he actually took literal dust and formed them. So, like, his view is actually that, and this is interesting too, because evangelicals have tended to be unified in a rejection of this. His view is actually, in a lot of ways, Walton's view is that just Genesis has nothing to do with any of these debates.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
One of the things that he says is, like, he says the view is not actually incompatible with two people from existing humanity being taken, who have had a naturalistic history of their own, being taken into the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And made representatives of all humanity.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, that actually is exactly the way they function. And then when Cain leaves, where does he go? He goes to where other people are. And who do they marry?
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of does. There's a lot of actually biblical evidence that there were other people
yeah.
at the time.
Especially the Cain incident.
Yeah. Well, and like people freak out about that in the evangelical church because they're like, well, what about sin? I mean, all humans are sinners, and so then they all have to be physically descended from Adam and Eve. Really? Is everyone physically descended from Jesus? Because
mm-hmm.
that's the argument they go to. They go to Romans, and they're like, well, as there was one Adam, there is one second Adam.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, actually, he's not related to very many of us at all.
So
he didn't have any kids.
Yeah,
I was looking it up.
Unless you're, the like, word I couldn't remember. The Da Vinci stuff.
The Da Vinci
kid. The word I couldn't remember, and this often comes up in the...
Adjudicate.
In the sort of conspiracy, not conspiracy, but the, you know, the pseudo academic world of origins, and so basically,
uh-huh.
what are Nephilim?
Oh,
ah, come on,
why, man?
We were doing so well.
Dang it!
Why did you have to ruin it?
I want to know. It's in the Bible.
You're
okay.
A heretic.
Aren't there some Nephilim on the earth now?
Yeah, Shaq.
You know, the funny thing about that is the Nephilim weren't even that tall.
Yeah.
They were like 6 feet.
Neither was Goliath.
That's what I was saying.
It measures the size of his spear.
Weren't people like 4 feet tall? Apparently it was pretty small.
But that's the point. Yeah, that's the point.
Isn't it weird that Goliath is referenced to as being like a Nephilim, but you would argue that the Nephilim got wiped out by the flood?
No, that's the thing I've always argued. That's one of my arguments biblically for a local flood.
Okay.
Because the Nephilim survived.
Okay, so I want to, for people...
Read the Bible. Okay.
Boom! Yeah. Limey just put up his hands like he's
got
insane.
What if one of Noah's sons were... No,
look,
survive?
Genesis 6.
Okay, so guys,
when
I want
to... When men began to multiply on the face of the land and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of man were attractive, and they took as their wives any they chose. Then the Lord said, my spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His day shall be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days. And also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of man, and they were born, they bore children to them. These were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. This
yeah,
is
so
before
the
flood.
So
this
by definition, the Nephilim are men of renown, mighty men of war. They're these really awesome warriors. And there's two traditional views of this, right? One of them being that the Nephilim... And the sons of God is a reference to those that were descendants of Seth. And the daughters of men were essentially the like ungodly populace. And they got married and they procreated and they ended up having descendants that were great warriors. That's one view.
It makes
another
sense.
View that's historically been pretty popular, and this is probably actually the historically popular view, is that the sons of God is a reference to angels. And angels got married to humans, and they produced giants who were men of renown and were great warriors. And that's what the Nephilim are. There are two views on this.
Well, there's more than two. But
really?
Yeah, there's a lot of debate now because of things like Enoch and stuff like that being
okay.
available. So, and other texts too that have come out. Here's the thing. I am not good on this subject because there's a lot of nuance involved.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to post just a massive amount of like Michael Heiser stuff on the blog post just so you guys have access to some of his stuff. I'm not saying he's right on everything. But like one thing that that Heiser says that Walden thinks is bonkers is that Heiser thinks that
can we stop here? And Aaron, you do research for one of these guys, or you
Michael Heiser? Research? Yeah.
Okay,
I've mentioned.
So
that
Aaron's been dealing with this literature recently much more than any of us have.
Yeah, and here's the thing: the nuance tends to be within. So okay, so you said that the line of Seth view is not, as far as I can tell, is not that old, and it's sort of like a Protestant
thing. That's true. Yeah.
A lot of Protestant, like the sad thing about recent Protestant history, like last couple, well, Protestant history is not that long, but Protestantism in some ways has tried to modernize itself and kind of make a marriage with non-supernaturalism.
Yes.
And the funny thing is that Catholicism is also a bastion of supernaturalism and science. I mean, in a lot of ways, the Catholic Church is responsible for the Enlightenment and science and all that stuff. In fact, the Enlightenment doesn't have all that much to do with the proliferation of science. In any case, whatever the second view, the one that has to do with them actually being supernatural beings, impregnated women, that is far more in line with the actual teaching. It's a little more complicated than that, but that's basically
the
right.
The only thing I could see is that there is a distinguishing between angels and demons, and then these beings.
Well, and the Watchers are a whole other thing too. And there's like they're all part of. According to Heiser, it seems like they're all part of the Divine Council, and then angels actually are a lower category for the most part. So the angels, the Malach in the Old Testament, are messengers, and they're almost like cronies in a way. So, and there's so much weird stuff in the Old Testament that we don't talk about anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, like there's a belief that demons are actually the ghosts of Nephilim. Like there's some Jewish beliefs that that's all demons are. They're not actually evil spirits in the way that we think of, like, these angels that went bad. Mm-hmm. They're like the ghosts of Nephilim that have escaped from Sheol or something like that, and they possess people. That's one of the reasons why they possess people, because they're looking for, like, a body. Mm-hmm. It's weird, man. There's weird stuff.
So it's interesting. Like, if you guys have seen Constantine, the movie.
Yeah. I used to really like that movie.
Keanu Reeves?
Yeah.
When he goes into this underground bar area, and there's all these hybrid human angel individuals.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're Nephilim. That's actually where the movie's kind of going after.
Yeah.
Their line still continues, but they're underground. But yeah.
Well, but so Heiser thinks that, like, we did that good blog post on Canaanite genocide, and Heiser's view is actually different from that view. He thinks that the only places where the harem is used are places that were known to be Nephilim strongholds, so that what was dedicated to destruction is the line of the Nephilim.
Hmm.
And the failure of Israel was that they did not actually do that. I think there's problems with that view. But John Walden, I emailed him about this because it kind of disturbed me, because the weird thing is he actually is saying that genocide went on.
Yeah.
It's just not human genocide.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just don't understand why God can't save them.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe he can't. I don't know. It's not like it's that big a thing in the Old Testament. But just the idea that there would be these people so unclean that God would have to kill them. In some sense, that's what's going to happen to Satan and his demons at the end. There's nothing in the scriptures anywhere that has to do with Satan repenting or being savable. So maybe that's exactly what happened, but it just doesn't seem fair. Some of that's probably because I read too many superhero comics. Because it's like, Hellboy deserves to be saved too.
Can you just explain,
okay, so,
real quick though, according to that second theory, what Nephilim are, like, concisely?
They're kind of like humans, but so anything you read on the internet about Nephilim is almost certainly false. Like, you hear things about them having double dentition, like two levels of teeth. That, as far as I can tell, that is completely made up. Like, if you read anything by Stephen Quayle is trash, as far as I can tell. And he's one of those guys that promulgates those giant photos. You know, those fake giant photos? The ones that have the giants being like 40 feet tall? Mm. So, humans weren't that big back then, partially because of nutrition. And, like, Goliath was probably 6 feet tall. In fact, he may have been shorter than 6 feet. But he was a giant amongst those people. Because he's... Everyone else is like maybe 4'10". Mm-hmm. That's pretty huge, you know? Humans are... The human body plan can't actually get that big. Like, giantism is a problem for people that have it. It's not like a good thing. Like, we're not made to get that big. In any case, so most of the stuff you read about the Nephilim is bonkers. But basically... They would have like a sort of a supernatural source, but ultimately they're sort of like people. They might be like monstrous people.
So, and on the other side of that, could us arriving at people being people made in God's image have had some other like flip side? Like, let's say they're like people plus. Could we have been people minus, and then God made us in Him, in His image?
Maybe.
What do you mean? Like
all? I'm just
so like we're hominids or something like that, and God just like, boop, like.
Isn't this Hugh Ross's view?
Hugh Ross's view of the Nephilim? No. I don't know if he has.
No, in regards to
the I was bringing up the Nephilim because. I'm trying to
inverse it.
Oh,
inverse
so it. So it's almost like it's a response to what God does in the garden, maybe. Like, so God takes people aside. Yeah, and he, like, improves them. And the watchers or whatever, I can't remember who specifically does it. I'm going to post stuff, and you guys will have much more clear understanding of what these texts mean.
Yeah.
But, because it is very confusing. But, yeah, that's possible. I mean... There, people used to think, in fact, Heiser might believe this too. I can't remember. If he ever listens to this, he will fire me. Thankfully, he's extremely busy, so he doesn't pay attention to what I do. There have been people, I can't remember if he's one of them, that think that the flood is in direct response to the creation of the Nephilim. Yes. Which kind of makes sense.
Well,
I mean,
comes right... I was just reading it. The next account after the Nephilim story is the flood.
And if you're reading the text in a narrative sense, the question you should be asking is, why does the flood happen at all?
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that whatever comes right before it is the cause, but it's definitely connected.
Yeah.
Limey, you're really...
Quiet.
You're really confused.
I'm not. I'm just listening. It's like Nephilim stuff.
Look... And then bring it back to Adam and Eve. The Adam and Eve account is in the context of there not being a suitable partner for Adam.
That's part of it, yeah.
And so there was something about his relationship to other animals. Because you see that he's comparing the woman. He's comparing the woman to the other animals. So there must have been something that the other animals couldn't provide him, that that the woman could provide.
Mm-hmm.
So companionship. You get companionship. My thing is that again, going back to remember we were talking about, you know, people not being Christians, kind of in the apologetic sense. The first 11 chapters of the Bible have more room for interpretation and diversity of interpretation than anywhere else in the rest of the Bible. Okay, maybe the apocalyptic stuff comes close to it.
Probably, yeah.
There's nothing else I could say. But and again, I want to encourage people who are like, well, I'm not a Christian because, you know, I believe in evolution. And I want to encourage you to say, no, you're not a Christian because you believe in naturalism, not because of evolution. And so it's not that necessarily you'd give up your evolution view. It's that you'd have to give up your view of naturalism.
Yeah.
I want to go after that. Mm-hmm. Because I want to make it open for people and say that's not necessary for salvation.
Yeah, definitely not.
We can have our in-house conversation.
If you think supernaturalism is on the face of it completely absurd, Christianity is not for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's for you regardless.
Because it's true.
Yeah, I just think you should give up your dumbness. But, like, if you think that I can't believe in any sort of supernaturalism, yeah, you're right. Like, this is not for you then. You think it's irrational? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can talk. I'm not saying you don't talk after that, but, like, supernaturalism is a fundamental thing. Like, we don't... It's just part of what we are and what we believe.
Yeah, and it's true. Now, going to, like, placing the Nephilim story, a lot of people do argue the Nephilim are, like, the reason why the evil corruptedness gets so much is because the Nephilim corrupt human existence even more, where God doesn't want to contend with human beings, and, you know, and you get this recreation. I mean, the Noah story is a recreation. That's a proper theological term to use.
Yeah.
Of what's going on with Noah. Even the fact that there's new laws given to Noah, he can eat animals.
Yeah.
Right? Where previously to Adam and Eve, that's not given. It's God is making a covenant with Noah.
Yeah.
We call this the Noahic covenant. Where he can do certain things where in the previous world that couldn't be done. The other thing that makes this situation a bit more complicated is whether one believes in a global flood or a local flood.
Yeah.
And if you believe in a local flood, then it makes the story of human expansion much easier, right? Because, okay, Noah's sons get down, and then you're like, well, you get this repopulation going on. Well, you say it was a local flood, the Nephilim survive, and that's why you get these references with Goliath. And some of these other giants that are mentioned. But Noah's kids are able to marry and intermarry with, you know. Or Noah's kids are already married, but their grandchildren, I guess, are able to, you know. Maybe when Noah and his sons got off the ark, Armenians were already there.
Well, they definitely...
Maybe Earth is a racist.
We definitely weren't destroyed in the flood.
We predate Noah.
Because we were the righteous
people.
From the line
of Melchizedek.
That's right. Melchizedek was Armenian.
We were there waiting on the mountain for them.
We were... I keep saying we. You guys were eating bread and drinking wine waiting for the Catholics.
You people.
All right, let's go ahead and bring this to a close because Arthur's about to kick us out of his office. So, anybody have any final things they want to say?
When's this podcast being released?
I don't know, whenever I get to it.
Well, if it is released before or during Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving. It's a great holiday. Look into the history of it.
Every day is Thanksgiving.
Oh,
should be giving thanks every day.
But Thanksgiving as a national day of not only Thanksgiving, but penitence.
Scandalously religious.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
We may be the only country that has.
I don't know. I saw Donald Trump.
National Day of Penitence.
Oh,
it's not just Thanksgiving.
Maybe not that.
I saw Donald Trump pardon that white turkey. It's kind of racist.
That was racist. I think he didn't choose the black.
But it was a white turkey, you know. But I love the joke he made.
About Obama's thing?
Yeah, about Obama. So he made a joke about how he's reversed a bunch of Obama's policies.
Yeah.
And he said that he was told that there's one thing that it is impossible for him to reverse is how Obama pardoned Tater Totter or whatever
the name.
Tater
Tot. Yeah. And the other one.
And, and so he said, unfortunately, he can't do that.
Yeah.
And that this turkey is going to go live with all those other turkeys.
That was pretty funny.
And then another thing Aaron probably doesn't know about this is that me and Hike spoke about this a bit yesterday on our show, is that in other countries, especially like in Armenia and Turkey and kind of the Middle Eastern regions, turkeys are called Indian chickens.
Turkish, they're just called India.
So they're actually not a reference to like Turkey, which we don't know where the origins of the
word. We don't call them the turkey.
Yeah, like Armenians call the turkey
Indian chicken. Same in French, actually.
Huh.
Same in French.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They must have come from India.
No, well, everyone calls it by something that they remember seeing
some kind of
in a foreign land. So, like, I've heard... I mean, there's one explanation that people saw the turkey and they thought of a certain bird that they reminded of from Turkey.
Okay.
People saw the turkey, were reminded of a certain bird from India. Or... And there's also the argument that they're using American Indian as Indian. And
yeah.
Anyway.
Like, it's the Native American bird.
Yeah. That's weird, man.
Yeah. Whatever. So that's kind of a fun note to end on. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Merry Christmas as well. Happy holidays.
Holy.
We have no idea when we're going to be able to get back together again. So
I was going to say Holy Advent. I just forgot the word for Advent for a second. I was going to say Lent.
I celebrate Yule.
Well, so I don't like any of that. We should be off kind of towards Christmas, right? Maybe a couple
times. We can do something around Christmas.
Yeah.
Just talk about...
All right, guys. Thanks for all your support, and we're going to sign off now.
This is Resistance TV contributor Aaron Gleason reminding you to contact us at resistancetv1@gmail.com. That's resistancetv1@gmail.com. You can find our blog at resistancetv.org. Feel free to send questions and comments to our email or simply comment on the blog posts. We appreciate any and all feedback, even if your name begins with Rich and ends with Hawkins. We are also on Twitter. If you would like to contribute financially, we have a Patreon page. We view Resistance TV as a ministry, a hobby, and a calling. This is one of the numerous ways each of us has imperfectly decided to imperfectly follow Jesus, our Messiah, and we would love to be able to do this for years to come. Any support or contribution you can make is greatly appreciated. Whether that is prayer, email, monetary, or in some other form, does not matter. Your support means a lot to us. We are a young podcast, so the best way to support us is by simply rating and reviewing us on iTunes or Google Play. This helps increase the visibility of our show. From all of us here at Resistance TV, may the God of Israel, whether you believe in him or not, bless and hold you in the palm of his hand, and by his strength may you resist evil until all things meet their end.
We're unapologetically apologetic.
Okay,
so let's talk
about... Any recent arguments against the existence of God you got?
Yeah. What was the one I recently heard? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, someone sent me a text the other day saying, hey, we really need to respond to this serious argument, and it's Christianity debunked in 1 minute. And the guy said, this is what he said. He said, if we all came from Adam and Eve, then we'd all be white, but we're not. So, Christianity debunked. You want to talk about how stupid that is? Maybe we should. Do you guys want to do evolution? Young Earth creationism?
I guess we could try. Yeah, why not?
You want to go ahead and do that?
Yeah, it'll help me formulate my opinion.
I got like really weird views of Genesis. So
that's totally fine. That the weirder the better.
Dude, if we talk about Genesis, that'll be awesome.
Actually,
too.
Yeah, because I was in a conversation with a guy yesterday who said that he grew up in a Christian home. And he left the faith because Christian claims did not correlate to reality. Okay. And most of the time he was talking about like Adam and Eve and evolution and stuff.
Okay.